Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Mana on the Rocks. It's I, Bald. Joining me this week, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Atlas.
Hello, everybody.
This week, it's a 5 or a 10. You know what that means. We got a local brew. Joining us this week, we got the man, we got the myth, we got the legend, Max.
Hello, everybody.
Bro, I'm the guy that got sued for copyright.
Oh my god! I'm sending the IRS after you, dude.
My bad. Hey, yeah. So my name is Max. Some of you might know me by my handle, Sworn Blade. Yeah, just a CEDH player, deck brewer, and lover of off meta strategies. So yeah, I'm excited to be here.
We love it. You probably tell from the title. Garuda is what we're covering today, and it's a sweet one, but not quite as sweet as these announcements. Atlas, what's sweet this time around?
This time around, it's pretty sweet that we're only 4 weeks out, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, from the CEDH4 tournament. It's going to be up in Issaquah, Washington at Laughing Dragon. So I'll be up there, Joe will be up there, we'll be playing some games, doing our best to try and climb to the top of that event again. Super well run, 100% proxy friendly. I highly recommend you register if you have not. Slots are starting to fill up, and it caps to 64 players. So go ahead and get signed up for that. And then, of course, the next weekend on February 17th is our local shop, Gabby's Olympic Cards and Comics, is holding their quarterly Commander tournament at Copper Real, the OCCS, and that will be a 10 card proxy limit. And that registration is opening, I think, this week. So go ahead and get signed up, and we will definitely see you there to duke it out for that title. And I think Max is even planning to be there.
Oh yeah.
All right. Oh yeah. So you might get to see him and his sick deck in action.
Might get to see the local brew in action.
The local brew in action.
Don't worry, just let it resolve. Just let it resolve.
Just let it resolve. Yeah, I think that is mostly it. Plug for anyone who cares. A couple of me and a couple of other players, unfortunately Joe was not able to make it with us, but me and Max will actually both be going out to Punt City 3 in Pennsylvania here in
womp
April.
Womp.
So disappointing for Joe, but exciting. Max will be over there, most likely playing this amalgamation of parts that we're about to go over.
we got to show the East Coast what's up.
Yeah, so West Coast rep. But we're going to go over there and play some games and do our best and have a great time getting to meet people and play some really good games of Magic. So look out for us there. I think that's everything for now. We might have some more announcements coming up in the next week or so about additional tournaments. But for now, without further ado,
we got to get a drink with this week's lucky patron, Meow Sarita. Thank you very much for your support. Come on down. Get a drink with us. Garuda, Doom of Depths. What, Max, read me this card. What does this card do?
Oh, it's a doozy. Okay. So Garuda Doom of Depths is 4 and 2 Dimir split pips for a total of 6 CMC for a legendary Demon Kraken. It has companion text that isn't relevant, but it says when Garuda enters the battlefield, each player mills 4 cards, put a creature card with an even mana value from among the milled cards onto the battlefield under your control. And it is a 6/6.
Okay, so we're milling is what we're doing.
Oh yeah.
Okay. What are we looking to do with the mills?
So Garuda mills not only you but all the other players. Mm-hmm. So what it's really good at doing is generating value by being able to put your own creatures, cheat them into play for high CMC costs that you normally aren't really able to cast, and also to steal other creatures from other people's libraries. And there's a lot of good creatures in Commander, especially in CEDH, that people play that are even CMC, like Gilded Drake, Grand Abolisher, Dockside Extortionist, Fimage, Phyrexian Metamorph, all of these clone effects that can not only keep your Garuda triggers going by copying it and then sending it to sacrificing to Legend Rule, but it basically just allows you to generate a lot of value off of chaining clone triggers, which we play a lot of clones in this Garuda deck.
We really do. I like looking at your list because there's just a lot of what the hell are these cards doing in CDH.
Yeah, you know it's a doozy when like you're playing across from someone and they play a card and you're just like, I have to read this card. I don't know what this does. I've never heard of this card before.
I'm a big fan of that feeling of playing those weirdo cards that make people go, you're making me have to understand your cardboard. What are you doing right now?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So it seems like, so broad overview, just trying to see if I get this right. So we're looking to just cast Garuda and then essentially just cascade from there.
I mean, yeah. A lot of the Garuda plan is you're trying to abuse the ETB triggers.
Okay.
And basically put in advantage pieces. We play a lot of advantage pieces on creatures such as like Talion and what's the other really good one? Oh yeah, Consecrated Displacer Sphinx. Displacer Kitten.
It was okay.
Displacer Kitten, Talion, they're kind of mid cards, honestly.
Yeah, but basically like this is a kind of deck that like vomits its hand. You need to have very, very clean and good mulligans. And make sure you have a hand that actually can do something, or else you can get really stuck. Unless you're like landing an early Talion or like a Rhystic Study or a Mystic Remora, like you can just like be stuck and be like pass go every single turn because you have nothing to do.
Okay.
Like, yeah. So you have to be careful with that. Mulliganing is very, very important with this list.
So we're talking so much about mulligans. What do you typically look for in your opening hands?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the way I like to look at it is this is going to sound really weird, but I feel like whenever I have a hand, it's like whenever you look at a hand when you're looking at your first seven or whatever, like the hand is like trying to tell you what it wants to do, right? Sometimes you have a bunch of lands and a Mystic Remora, and what that hand is telling you to do is, okay, you're going to play the Mystic Remora and just keep it going for as long as possible to draw some cards, right? I would say for this list, there's usually different hands generally that you'll see. One is you'll see for hands that you want to keep at least, will be a hand that is normally like a turn one advantage piece, whether that's usually like either a Mystic Remora or a Rhystic Study are good.
The classics.
Yeah, I mean, as any blue player would enjoy seeing those, a turn one of those, right? So usually like a turn one Remora or like a turn two Rhystic Study are like really strong, or like a turn two like Talion is also very good. Something that allows you to not have to like feel like you have to turbo out Garuda to have like a board presence. Those are very, very strong cards to have. Other hands, sometimes you just get a hand with like land, crypt, Grim Monolith, Mox Opal, and you're just like, okay, I can just cast my commander on turn one and then maybe get some value. The hard thing about that is, while I do think a lot of times that can be correct, sometimes you just miss on the Garuda triggers. And if you're counting everything on one Garuda trigger, you whiff on the trigger and now you're stuck. You have no more gas and you can't like reactivate Garuda off of any sort of flicker effects you have. It can be very difficult to stay in the game. So that's why mulliganing is important, is you need to make sure that you don't just fold to one counter spell. So sometimes that means like you have to go really quick and just hope for the best, especially if you have a table with stacks, where you feel like you're not going to be able to get any value if you wait. So it just really depends on what's at the table and kind of what you're seeing in your hand, whether you go fast or you try and slow down and play controlly, even though we're not on a ton of counter spells and interaction in this list.
Yeah, it almost reminds me a little bit of one of Atlas's favorite little adventures, Two Trees, kind of in a way, where like it can go fast. And like usually if you can get to do your thing at like a good time, like you're going to just get to the finish line.
Right.
You know, you'll hit the cascade trigger. I keep saying cascade triggers, like the clone skate.
I mean, yeah, kind of cascades, but
kind of cascades. Yeah. Or like you just get lucky on just like a random, like, well, I guess I just cast the Garuda and like, oh, there's a Grand Abolisher. I have this Thoracle in my hand that I can just cast next turn for free.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I this deck sounds sweet, dude. I've seen it in action. I've joined games, and I just see you go, okay, Garuda, flip, clone, Garuda, flip, clone, Garuda, and I'm just like, this deck's insane. It's just you just go, yeah. You just burr.
It's like a great example of like the highest. You have the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. Sometimes you just flip a Garuda, you like hit a Tidespout Tyrant and just win the game, and then sometimes you get like. One flip, you whiff, and then you're sitting there for 20 minutes while the breach player is winning off of the cards you milled them. You know, it is what it is sometimes.
Free breach activations. You milled Savine's Wreck.
Yeah, I will say that's one of the weaknesses of this deck is you do feed breach players, and breach is just a very prominent card in CEDH.
Yeah.
It's something you really have to be aware of. So a lot of times when I'm playing, I really try and avoid if there's breach players at the table. especially if they're like in an advantageous position. I try and avoid doing too many activations. I just try and do like one activation or two activation off of clones. So just like jam an advantage piece, whatever that is, or to hit or to like put in a clone and copy a dockside or get some value for myself so I can actually like, you know, continue to forward my game plan. It just really depends on the board state, which is kind of just the story of this entire deck.
For sure. For sure. All right. Well, speaking of the board state, we got some creatures to start breaking down. Atlas, what do we got starting us off?
So from the list that you sent us, what I'm seeing is that the creature package looks pretty like similar to what you'd expect at the low end. You got Dot the Voidwalker, which synergizes really well with your commander CTB because you're nabbing 12 cards from your opponents just off casting your commander.
Yeah, we
are. Which is pretty cool. And then you've got Gilded Drake, Orcish Bowmasters, Phantasmal Image, Thassa's Oracle, and then Flesh Duplicate is another clone, two mana. Mm-hmm. The most interesting thing that I've seen about this deck that I'll note before we go too much further, and it makes sense once you read the commander, but every single creature in the list is an even converted mana cost, so that no matter what you hit, you're able to potentially put it into play with the Garuda trigger.
Yeah.
So that's a very unique deck building restriction. Like, it's not something that that people really think about, like, unless they're doing something with Companion, just putting deck building restrictions on themselves like that. But here you are playing just even costed creatures.
Yeah, and when you think about that, like, you think, oh, okay, you know, you're just missing a couple. But I will say that there are a couple of, like, notable exclusions for creatures. Like, one of them being Opposition Agent, which might be crazy to some people, especially in, like, a two-color Dimir deck. Like, why would you not play Opposition Agent? I've done some testing with it, and the problem is most of the time you see it. Like, sometimes you get it, and you get it into your hand, and it feels fine. But most of the time that you see it, it's off of, like, Garuda triggers, and it just feels bad every time, especially when you get no other creatures, so you can't even put any other creature in play. And every time I've seen that Opposition Agent get milled, I'm just like, I don't even care what creature it is. I would just rather it be anything else besides an Opposition Agent. It just feels really bad when you feel like you're missing value off of playing an odd CMC creature, because you can only put in even CMC creatures.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting point of note, because you mentioned that this isn't really like a control list. Like, you're blue-black, like, you have, like, you're in blue. You can play the control game a little bit, but you're not, like, a dedicated control list. Like, I think I'm going to keep referencing Two Trees just because I think it's a pretty good comparison, but, like, that deck doesn't play anything besides the counter spells that it can use to protect its own turn. And I kind of see that line of thinking here as well, where, like, yeah, the Oppo is going to be good in some matchups and it's going to be really, really clutch. Like, it's a good card, but it's not where we're trying to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are times where I think that you have to transition to a more control-y style of play, depending on the board state.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But most of the time, like, you just can't afford to. Like, we need to make sure we have a very high concentration of creatures, or else our Garuda triggers become weaker because we're hitting things less.
Mm-hmm.
But also, at the same time, we have to be on enough interaction and also flicker effects, like we're on Ghostly Flicker and Essence Flux, and like Saw in Half, all these effects that actually help us start triggers at instant speed, which are really important to making this deck more unpredictable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I like the flicker package a lot.
And we'll get to that one once we get to like the instance and stuff. I'm sure you'll have a lot of things to share with us about all of the tech you can do with those. But we'll just move into the mid-range section of the creatures here. We got like a bunch of 4-mana stuff. We got like more clones being Clone, Displacer Kitten, you can flicker your commander for value. We have another clone called Gigantoplasm, which can sacrifice itself, which is kind of neat. And then we have some of the more niche, like weirder ones, like Clever Impersonator. It's a little
Clever
bit harder to cast.
Gas.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a little harder to cast at blue-blue, but it can be a copy of any non-land permanent on the battlefield, which is just oppressive if you make it a second Rhystic Study, like you have done in a game that I was playing before.
Yeah, it's honestly, Clever Impersonator is probably one of the best clones in the list, in my opinion. Just because, like, yeah, it just becomes a One Ring, or it becomes a Rhystic Study, or becomes a stacks piece on the board that's not a creature. You know, like, it can become a Grafdigger's Cage if you really need to, or it can become like a Rest in Peace if you need to. It's just really nice because it's just so much more flexible than all the other clones, which only come in as any creature in the battlefield, and some are even more restricted and can only come in as copies of creatures on your board. So that's something to keep in mind as well.
I love Clever Impersonator, dude. I as a con blocks newbie, starting off on that set, I saw Clever Impersonator and I understood what clone effects did, and I understand like non-land permanent being like a pretty wide net to cast. I went, this card's pretty good. So seeing this here makes me smile in my heart.
Yeah, it's gas. It's a really good card.
Okay, so then we got some more clones. I'm just gonna list these names because we just do not have the time to go over all of the weird ass effects that these things have stapled for them. We got a card called Mirror Hall Mimic that can disturb itself into an enchantment. We have Phyrexian Metamorph, which is pretty standard. And then there's Roaming Throne, so you can double up on triggers from Garuda.
Yep. Roaming Throne is gas. Holy.
That's a very cool card. You can also do things with... you have a bunch of other ETBs, so depending on what happens, you can name other creature types, like for Ruthless Technomancer, you can name like Human. Or for Broodlord, if you need double ETBs for whatever reason, you can name Dragon. So it's very versatile in that way, too. You don't have to feel stuck. And you can also flicker it to change that if you need to.
Yeah.
Change the type.
Or using the Displacer Kitten or one of your various and sundry flicker effects from the instant section.
Yep.
But speaking of Ruthless Technomancer, this is your favorite card in the deck.
I think it's really interesting because with this list, I've seen a lot of really old lists of this made. Of Garuda made, and they're just not very strong, but I do think over the last couple years there have been a ton of really big like new cards supporting this list now, and I think one of the biggest ones is actually Ruthless Technomancer printed in Kamigawa. It's really strong. If it ETBs, you may sacrifice another creature you control and create a number of treasure tokens equals to that creature's power. So just right off the bat, it can come in and it can sacrifice a creature and make a bunch of mana for you, which is strong. But the stronger part about it is its ability, which is 2 and a black, sacrifice X artifacts, return target creature card with power X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. X can't be 0. So basically what that's saying is you can crack 3 treasures for 2 and a black and sacrifice one of your treasures that you made and return any of your clones into play.
Because clones have 0 power when they're not on the battlefield.
Yeah, typically, so you have to sacrifice one, so you have to sacrifice at least one. Most of the clones have 0 power and 0 toughness, so typically you just have to crack 4 treasures in total to bring it back into play, which is really strong, and it allows you to respond at instant speed by making a bunch of treasures on its ETB, and then have a bunch of activations as well. It's a very powerful effect.
Yeah, when I first went over your list, I saw the Ruthless Technomancer. I'm like, is this card actually good? And then you both were like, yeah, this card's insane. I reread it and I'm like, oh, it's power X or less. And then I went over every clone. I'm like, oh, yep, all of these say 0. This card's insane.
Yeah, I honestly think that Ruthless Technomancer is one of the best cards in the deck. It's one of the main things that makes this deck very strong.
Well, I mean, just you get this off your commander, you sacrifice your commander, you have 6 treasures. You've cast a free Garuda.
Yeah. And typically you have extra, so the best situation you'll find with Ruthless Technomancer is if you have a Garuda and then a clone that ignores the legend rule, mm-hmm. and then you can put the Ruthless Technomancer in sacking that clone of your Garuda to make 6, and that way you can then loop it and then bring it back immediately, still holding 2 treasures to make another Garuda. So you're starting to net mana off your activations too. It's also flickerable, so if you flicker it, then it can sacrifice stuff again. So yeah, that's another aspect that makes it very powerful.
That's so crazy.
God, yeah, that's pretty wild. That's some super interesting lines that you've come up with for that, for sure. Speaking of clones with no legend rule, we're playing Sakashima the Imposter. We're playing Spark Double. One of those clones that you mentioned that can only copy your stuff. I think we're playing another Sakashima somewhere.
We're playing the Imposter. Yeah.
Got Stunt Double, my boy.
Oh yeah, Stunt Double sheet in this list. So
this
good.
This card's so good. It's just generically strong. Yep. And when you're clone storming, this is the thing to do. You mentioned Talion. We got a bunch more weird clones in here. We got this one called Auton Soldier. We got another weird one from Warhammer called Kalidus Assassin.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the last couple slots at your top end are just Consecrated Sphinx, you mentioned, another advantage piece.
Yep.
Hoarding Broodlord and Tidespout Tyrant, which are more win-the-game creatures that you can flip off the trigger at 8. And then Deadeye Navigator, which is just a sort of a second flicker effect that you could do with Garuda, which is kind of neat. And it's also pretty cool because you're playing so many clones, you aren't in red, but if anyone else leaves a dockside just sitting on the battlefield and you happen to flip into this or cast this Deadeye Navigator, you just make infinite mana and infinite flickers.
Deadeye Navigator is an interesting card in this list because it does a couple of things. Like, you're right, if there's a dockside in play or if I flip off a dockside, it is just an infinite mana outlet if I have a clone in play, which is ridiculously strong. It also has other combos, specifically with Ruthless Technomancer, which is what I really like. This is such an interesting combo, is that if you have Garuda in play, and if you have a legendary clone in play, like, for example, Spark Devil is an example, or Auton Soldier, that ignores the legend rule, you can bring it into play. You can bring it into play off of a Ruthless Technomancer activation, and you can get a Garuda trigger. If you have a Deadeye Navigator in play, soul bonded to your Ruthless Technomancer, you can get that activation, put in whatever, doesn't really matter if you whiff, but then you can spend two of the treasures you made off of getting six treasures from your clone, spend two of them to flicker your Ruthless Technomancer to sacrifice the clone you have in play, and then spend four to bring it back. So you're not netting any treasures, but you have you get the ETB, and that's what matters. You get as many Garuda activations as you want. And another interesting aspect is that if you do it with Spark Double, because Spark Double comes in with an extra +1/+1 counter, you actually net a treasure every single time. So you're actually able to generate infinite mana.
That's wild. That way.
That's so sick. I love it. That's so cool.
There's a couple things like that as well. One thing to mention as well is Auton Soldier. Is that it has it's a clone that ignores the legend rule, but it has text on it called Myriad. And if you don't know what Myriad is it's whenever it attacks, for each opponent other than the defending player, you may put a token that's a copy of this creature onto the battlefield tapped and attacking that player or a planeswalker they control. Exile the tokens at end of combat. The one thing is that if it comes in as a copy of Garuda and you swing at somebody, then you're going to make two attacking copies of Garuda with Myriad. So you're going to have two extra ETB triggers coming on the stack from the two Garudas that you made. And when your clones come in play, they can also come in play as a copy of Auton Soldier. So very often what can happen is that you might clone storm into an Auton Soldier, then into two more clones. They'll come in as Auton Soldiers. On your turn, you'll go to attacks. You'll attack with those three, and then you'll have six Garuda triggers on the stack. And let me tell you, six Garuda triggers is enough to win the game.
I'm so glad that you talked about Auton Soldier, because I was going to make us talk about that, because this card reads, like, insane in this list. This card reads everything in this list.
Yeah, it's one of the most expensive clones, but it is also just one of the strongest clones. It's the clone that you want to hit every single time if you're hoping for a clone.
Oh, yeah.
That and Clever Impersonator.
Oh, yeah. And I think in a deck where you're so, like, clone-centric, like, having this be in the deck building requirement, if it needs to be even, you're going to be running a lot of clones. You want a critical mass of clones, and you want really the best clones, or like the most clone plus extra good text on them. This is a clone with really good text on it.
Yeah, it is. I don't want to get too stuck on the clones so we can move to other things, but I do want to quickly mention Tidespout Tyrant and Broodlord. They are even. Tidespout Tyrant is a very simple win con with this deck. It's just, you have a bunch of rocks, you make infinite mana, and then you can start looping in Garuda to put all your creatures into play, put everyone else's creatures, well, not all your creatures, but you get to put a bunch of creatures into play. You'll always get like clones and stuff like that, and things from other people, and then eventually you'll get to the point where you have all the remaining clones and things, pieces that you need from your list, and then you can start, if you have Ruthless Technomancer in play, you'll have infinite mana, so you can start just reanimating all your clones, mill everyone out, and then most of the time put a Thor clone to play, and just win the game.
Cringe.
Another interesting thing about this list is it's very common to just put Thor clone to play to scry and see what's on top. And also, because you're playing so many clones, it's very common that you'll just put Thor clone to play and then just wait until you can just keep it in play because nobody cares about it, and then eventually you're just going to put a clone in play, and then you can just copy the Thassa's Oracle and go for a win that way as well. It's very unsuspecting, and people don't really think about it too much. Yeah, and then for Broodlord, it's on some pretty like long and convoluted lines. There's really no true Broodlord lines in this list, but kind of the interesting thing about this list is that the win you go for just depends on so many factors in the games. What's on your opponent's boards? What's in your graveyard for bringing into play? A lot of times it's just searching for Saw, cast Saw, find on your Broodlord, get Sacrifice and Ruthless Technomancer, put Ruthless Technomancer into play, and then start putting clones into play and or other things. Typically, once you have Ruthless Technomancer in play, you're in a very strong state that you can most likely win the game from, especially if you have extra mana. But there's a lot more to Broodlord, but yeah, it just comes from all your flicker effects, and it's just very versatile and a very strong game-winning piece.
It seems like it's an at-home card in this deck for a win condition. I think the win conditions are pretty, like, solid.
Plus, if you're making all these creatures, like, giving the Convoke text to the card you're shooting for is not irrelevant.
Oh, yeah. It's very common that you have, like, five or six creatures in play, and that's five or six, like, lands you have in play. And since you're mostly copying Garuda, you're never going to be stuck being like, oh, man, I can only Convoke for colorless or something, because it's split-pipped. It's both blue and black. So you're pretty much always able to tap for your colors from your clones and your other creatures in play. So that's something you normally never have to worry about.
Sweet. I love it. Yeah, no, I think we can talk about the Broodlord and the Broodlord lines forever. So let's move on to the next category. We got sorceries. We got six of them. They're very good six sorceries, they are. We have Imp Seal, we have Reanimate, we have Detutor, Meme Betrayal, Praetor's Grasp, Toxic Deluge. Imp Seal seems like it's at a premium because we're milling. We can set up a mill and then cast Garuda and get our guaranteed flip.
Yep. Yeah, being able to put something on top like Vampiric Tutor is even better because you can do it at instant speed and set it up that way. You can do those with Broodlord lines as well, which is cool. But most of these things I think are pretty, you know, normal, especially like Detutor, Imp Seal, Reanimate, and Toxic. Like, those all just seem very at home. Some people might, you know, think like, oh, with Mnemonic Betrayal and Praetor's Grasp, those are more like, you know, cuttable cards, which I do agree with. But one of the things with Mnemonic Betrayal is you're milling your opponents constantly.
Yeah, we
it's
are.
It's the same thing as that Dothi Voidwalker.
Exactly. It's the same thing. Is you get to play, is just getting like, let's say two Garuda Triggers off people, that's 24 cards that you get to look at in other people's graveyards, which is an insane amount. And normally a game-winning amount, even off of just like two triggers. It's pretty insane. And then Praetor's Grasp is just like Dockside is really strong for us. We can combo with it in a variety of ways. So the best way for a Demir list to play Dockside is to steal it from the Dockside players.
Seems really solid. No, I like Meme Betrayal a lot in this list. Like you said, I mean, two flips. Everyone runs good cards. That is the thing. I think that's part of the reason why we see so many clone effects run around these days. Is everyone just on a million good cards?
Oh yeah.
And when you go, oh, do I play this weirdo card that's sometimes kind of good, or do I just play a clone effect and copy the best thing on the board? It's like, well, I'm gonna play the clone effect is gonna be better in that vacuum.
Yeah, totally.
Meme Betrayal fits the same bill.
Yeah, and I think that's like a lot of lists that, you know, a lot of lists have been playing like Phyrexian Metamorph, for example, just because it's a really good clone. It's a 4-mana clone that you can cast for 3. But another thing is like with the One Ring, I think that's brought like Phyrexian Metamorph to the attention a lot more, because you can just copy a One Ring with it, which is just, it's just insanely strong.
It's just backbreaking.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, Atlas.
Let's jump into those instants. Okay, so you said it's a pretty limited counterspell suite, like we mentioned. Got Pact of Negation. It's like the best defend your own turn counterspell there is. Offer is like the best 1-mana counterspell there is. I'm seeing Flusterstorm, Misstep, Swansong, and it looks like Mana Drain. Kind of makes sense. You have an expensive commander, 4 generic pips. And then Force of Will. You're also running Mindbreak Trap, which I find is a little interesting, just because of just like if you're playing a little bit more aggressive strategy, Mindbreak Trap seems less good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also just like a great counterspell too, so I like seeing it there. It just surprises me a little bit.
Yeah, well, there's an interesting story behind that. That's actually a very recent add, and it does bear testing. It's a card that I very recently added, and I actually cut Fierce Guardianship for it, which I know seems crazy for like a very commander-centric playstyle. But what I found is there's normally two times in this list where you need counterspells. One time is when you're casting your commander, and having Fierce Guardianship in your hand to protect your commander when it's not in play it just doesn't do anything for you. And then the other time that we like it is when other people are going for a win or trying to stop us. And both of those times, we're very vulnerable to things like Flusterstorm, which Mindbreak Trap gets around. And we're also very vulnerable to basically any form of like lots of interaction, which normally happens because we're casting a ton of spells. So it's very common we're forcing a lot of spells out of people. and Mind Break Track's good for that. And it's also just better at stopping other people's turbo wins, which I think that is the one thing to realize with this list. Like, this list can go fast, but it's not going faster than Rog'Sai. It's not going faster than most other Grixis good pile lists. And so you need to just be very careful with that. And so that's one of the main reasons I'm trying out this card, because I think it has a lot of potential to help slow down those strategies and also protect wins later in the game.
Yeah, I mean, even like just a decent value Mind Break Trap is so good. So often I personally get got by Mind Break Trap when I go like, I don't know, like Tutor, Dork, plus like whatever else. And then I'm like, I hope I don't get Mind Break Trapped on this whatever else. And then I get Mind Break Trapped on this whatever else. I'm like, yep, that was my game plan. Right there, just out the window.
Oh yeah, I've definitely sent a Mind Break Trap on like turn one, land, Chromox, like Mana Crypt or a Vault or something like that. And then they send a draw engine on like turn two from seat one. You're like, Mind Break Trap just takes people out of the game.
Shut them out.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think like a very underrated part of the card is it's not counter target spell. It's exile any number of target spells.
Yeah, it is.
And I think especially like a couple of times, Atlas, when I've been playing this list against you, Mind Break Trapping my commander is Mind Break Trapping Garuda feels so bad because we're playing so many reanimate effects. Most of the time, I'd say probably like 75% of the time, like I'm just sending him to the graveyard because I have
you just need him out of the command zone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because like especially if you're turboing out Garuda, 8 mana to cast Garuda when you have like you know like a 2 lands, a talisman, and like a Jeweled Lotus, it's like unattainable to recast Garuda. You have to cheat it into play off of a reanimate effect, so that's something else to keep in mind.
Yep. My days of playing reanimator decks and chainer, getting got by delay on my Doxa, because I'm like, oh, if my Doxa gets countered, I don't care, I'm just gonna get it again. And it's just like, nope, we're exiling that shit. It's like, oh man, yeah, feels so bad.
Okay, so aside from counter spells, you do have a couple of other unique instances going on here. There's some more standard ones like Entomb, we said that, Dark Ritual, Ramp, Consult, you have Sacrifice for your Broodlord stuff, Born Upon a Wind, more rituals with Cabal Ritual, removal spells, Cyclonic Rift, you have a Limdol's Vault, Zotoptic Tutor set up again. It's kind of just like a second copy of Vampiric Tutor. And then we get into the juicy stuff, which is playing Essence Flux, like you mentioned earlier. And we're also playing Ghostly Flicker and Saw in Half. And aside from Broodlord stuff, Saw in Half can do some pretty interesting things in this list. So what do these flicker effects do? Because I know you said you had some stuff you wanted to mention about them.
I mean, the main thing that's really good about these flicker effects is at the end of the day, they're instants, right? So that means we can respond at instant speed. You're trying to remove Garuda, I'll respond by Essence Fluxing my Garuda to protect it. And it not only protects it, but it also puts an ETB trigger on the stack, which is very scary. And if you don't think it's scary, then you haven't played against the list yet. It is a very scary thing. One of the scariest things that I've played against with this list is somebody casting a Phantasmal Image and copying my Garuda. That is the most terrifying thing.
I vomited a little, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but the flicker effects are really strong because I think I've seen several other lists that have been made around Garuda. Most of them aren't really competitive, and there's kind of like two types of lists that I've seen. One of them is like the Clone Storm Garuda, where you're on every single even cost clone that there is that you can play. And the whole point is it is just a mill deck. I'm going to keep hitting clones and milling until I can't mill anymore. And then the other side of it that I've seen is basically a Reanimator Doomsday Garuda, where the whole point of Garuda is to crack your Doomsday pile and to basically flip into a Thoracle off of the top 5 and win the game that way. And I think that both of those lists have interesting ideas, but they both suffer from like going too far to one extreme. I think that the Doomsday lists don't really play that many creatures. They play like 10 creatures, which is just way too low. You're not taking advantage of how oppressive Garuda activations and ETBs can be. And I think that when you're going on that Clone Storm aspect, you're giving up all of the very strong instants that you can be playing to make these interactions. So like with this list, that's one of the main things I've focused on, is taking those two aspects and trying to like combine them and make it so it's actually more interactable and a little less predictable.
Yeah.
Because people don't expect you to go for instant speed wins with this list. I think most people, when you sit down at the table with this list, you're going to think, I've never heard of this commander. It just seems really weird. Doesn't really do anything. But I think that's one of its greatest strengths at this point, is that it's not really known to be a competitive deck, and that's why I think it's very strong right now. Kind of has that Tyam effect where before people knew how to play against it and knew what it did, it was taking, you know, CEDH just taking by storm. Yeah.
When, and the thing with like kind of dragging it towards the middle of like not quite combo, not quite like turbo, is you get to keep a lot more flexible hands. Like you can keep like a turbo Garuda hand and be fine with like whiffing on an activation, but it's okay. You still have an Essence Flux, you still have a Ghosted Flicker, a Saw in Half. Like you can still do things with those cards and your like limited amount of remaining mana because you've kept the fast mana hand, you've kept the Jeweled Lotus Petal, like you've kept all like all rituals essentially to turbo Garuda out, and you have just enough mana to try and keep going or try and keep interacting from there. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, and so yeah, I think that's the main reason that the flicker effects are super good. There's also combos like or I've seen people go for like dual caster mage wins, and you can respond to those by like flashing in like a stunt double and then like ghostly flickering your stunt double after it becomes a
classic.
Yeah, and you can win the game that way if you have a Garuda out, just infinite triggers off of the infinite dual caster ranges you're making. So you can do really interesting stuff. I think my favorite part of this list is that it's super flexible with your clones, and you're able to go for these really unique wins because you have so much flexibility with what you can do with all of the clones that you play and the very dynamic playstyle of it.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. Let's see, I think that just about covers all the instants, right, Atlas?
Yeah, I don't think there was anything left on the instants. I think the only things left are artifacts and enchantments, of which your artifact package, there's really nothing to say. You're playing the best ramp you can, and that's pretty much what you got. You've got the One Ring in there and Wishclaw Talisman. The rest of it, cast Garuda.
Yep. Dimir Signet's like the only like wacky quote unquote mana rock, but like we're in blue black. We're taking all the ramp options we can.
Yeah, 100%. It just sets up for quick Garuda. It's also having a very high artifact count is important just for Ruthless Technomancer, because you can use that to help kickstart combos. Using it, you know, a couple of times I've gotten wins by sacrificing like the four early rocks I made to Ruthless Technomancer to put in like a Tidespout Tyrant. It really helps to belay the cost of it. It's very, very good.
Yep, and density with Tidespout Tyrant, so we need the artifacts. Like,
we need those positive rocks for sure.
About as standard and like expected as like you really need to be.
Yeah.
Enchantments, also like more or less kind of standard. We're on five of them, but they're all very good. Mystic Remora, Animate Dead, Black Market Connections, Necromancy, Rhystic Study. Fish and Study, you're in blue. You put these two cards in immediately once you select that color.
Yeah.
Animate Dead, Necromancy, we're milling people. These say reanimate from any graveyard. Seems pretty good. Black Market Connections, though.
Yeah, this card is a pretty recent addition as well. It's still in its like testing phase, and I'm not sure if it's gonna stick with like the actual final list that I'm gonna be taking to tournament, but it is, the way I look at it is one of the things I feel like the deck has been lacking lately is just like a turn one or turn two advantage piece you can put into play to just accelerate your game plan. And Black Market Connection says each turn make a treasure and draw a card for 3 life, and that's pretty darn good.
Sometimes you don't need more than that sometimes.
And we're not on, you know, like Bolas's Citadel or Nahs or Pyr or anything like that. We're really not using our life as a resource, so having this seems like a really good way of actually using the fact that we're in black and we can use our life as a resource. Seems like a pretty decent way to use that.
No, I agree. I've been a personal proponent for, if you're not doing any of the life juicing, Black Market Connections is like, you can cast it off a Rhystic Study and it will just carry you.
Yeah.
Or not cast it off a Rhystic Study, cast it off a Mana Crypt. And
just like Rhystic Study.
Just like Rhystic Study.
That's the way I've looked at it. It's a second copy of Rhystic Study that's like slightly worse.
Significantly worse, but
yeah, no, you're right. It is a lot worse. But the way I look at it is, and the reason I think it's actually pretty close to Rhystic for this list is that it makes treasures, it makes mana for us, which is really important for our early game plan for getting Garuda into play. So it accelerates us every turn. It's basically a land drop every turn to get it towards our Garuda.
No, I really agree with that, because I think like if you think about it, like Joe said, if you're doing turn one land mana crypt, Black Market Connections, that's 3 mana on turn one. On turn two, you make a treasure, which puts you to 4. And then if you hit another free rock or a land or something like that, you can easily cast Garuda on 2.
Yeah, it sets you up pretty well. And also just like the main thing is too, is it draws cards, like Rhystic Study, it'll draw you cards and it helps refuel your hand, which is something that this deck sorely needs.
Absolutely. And then your lands, of course, once again, super standard black-blue lands package. The only thing that's little different is that even though you're not playing turbo, like ad nauseum, you're on a pretty low land count at 26. And then you're on Cavern of Souls because you care about making that Garuda or name a clone or something like that. Yeah.
Shapeshifter is a good thing to name in this list. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, like it's, you have a very tribal list for what it is. So like Cavern of Souls is good and not something you'd see in every single blue-black list. And then you're also on City of Traders, which once again, not something that you see in every Dimir deck, but seems pretty good in this one when you're trying to accelerate your commander as fast as possible.
Yeah, it's just that like if you're on turn two or turn three, you can just like put down the City of Traders to get you that extra mana that you need to hit Garuda. It can very often bring you like a turn sooner Garuda, which is very strong even if you have to sack it probably on your next turn. But you still get a ton of value out of it. It's totally worth playing.
So for our utility lands, we're kind of on some pretty basic stuff. We're on Emergent Zone. Honestly, I think ever since everyone started playing with Born Upon the Wind, everyone's just like jamming E-Zone, and I kind of agree with it.
I mean, like, you have the slot, right? It's just Born Upon a Wind, but as a land.
Yeah, it's just free.
It's just free.
Yeah, and then Command Beacon gets around Dranth Magistrate, which I think going through this list is the biggest thing that this deck loses to, apart from Counterspell and Garuda, is just Dranth Magistrate locking us out of our game plan. And also, if Garuda does get Mindbreak trapped, we can just put it into our hand.
Yeah, but don't worry, that has never happened to me. Never.
I would never Mindbreak trap a turn two Garuda.
No, a turn one Garuda, you mean?
Turn one Garuda, even.
Yeah.
But yeah, we try and get around Dranith. And like you said, like Dranith is a pretty big, issue that we have to get around. A couple other like cards that we have to keep an eye out for is Grafdigger's Cage, which I will say I haven't seen a lot of people playing recently. I haven't really seen it in a lot of games. It seems to be
dropping down a bit, yeah.
Yeah, and then another big one is Elishnorn, Mother of Machines. It just kills ETBs, and I will say, Dranith is scary, but we can get around Dranith. There is pretty much no way, we're so ETB-focused that Elishnorn it just hoses us. It hoses us pretty hard.
Do you think it's worth it putting in like just a generic like non-land bounce or something then at that point, or removal spell?
I don't think so. I think the best way we counter Elishnorn, honestly, is playing a clone that comes in as a copy of Elishnorn, and then hope theirs gets removed, or figure out a way to like pressure their life total with our bunch of like big creatures. That's like the best thing, and then just keeping up on interaction. But typically with stacks pieces, especially stacks pieces like Elishnorn, is that as soon as Elishnorn's gone, somebody's going to try and dockside and win the game too. So that's really scary.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes.
But at the very least, what this does is it helps protect us. And also, like, let's say their Elishnorn gets removed and ours stays. Double ETBs are pretty good in this list.
Who would know that Roaming Throne is strong?
Yeah, seriously.
God, yeah. They literally printed Tribal Panharmonic on.
Yeah, no, seriously. Yeah, and I will say, like going back to like cards that have been added recently that have helped this deck, like Roaming Throne and Ruthless Technomancer have made this list a lot better, significantly stronger for like recent printings.
The fact that you can cast them from your hand, then cast Garuda to get the benefit, or like you just flip into them and now you just have this effect at your disposal is insane.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really strong.
Cool.
Yeah, this is a really sick list that you put together, Max.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because me as a deck builder, I'm a big fan of like off meta commanders and very unique play styles and gameplay patterns, and this has that in spades. And I just think it's fun because I think there's a lot of like, you know, four color and five color lists and, you know, Tivit lists out there that are all playing just the best cards that they can be playing. And so this is like really fun to me because it allows you to like play their lists with all your clones and stuff like that, which has just been a real blast to build and also play. So yeah, I've been very satisfied with this so far. It's been a lot of fun.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. No, this list is everything. It's so cool. I love the game plan. I love that it can It has pivots for instant speed lines. It gets to play a lot of clone effects, which clone effects are just an obnoxious and really, really gross right now and good. You get to play a bunch of those. You get to play a bunch of weirdo cards. You get to play Auton Soldier. You get to play with
Myriad. Cards gas. It's so
cards
good.
Gas. Like, and you have like a crazy top end, and you're like pretty resilient, all things considered. And like your mulligans are pretty clean. It's a lot of good stuff. I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. The way I look at this deck is the game plan is super simple until it's not.
Until you have to start making a lot of decisions in a small amount of time. Oh my god.
It's like, dude, I just have to cast my commander or jam this Rustic Study, and then you get to the point where you're like, okay, I have like barely have a board state and I have a bunch of mana and like five clones. What the heck am I supposed to do here? Yeah. It's just the pivot points for deciding where you have to interact and also go for wins and figuring out lines, especially with like the complicated aspects of like Broodlord and stuff. It's just really fun. It's fun how it's different every time the way you get there. So
yeah, I can definitely appreciate that. I can really appreciate having like a different experience every game, and this seems like it brings that to the table just because you're milling everybody. Like sometimes you do just mill someone wrong. You're like, oh, that's Savine's Wreck and Breach in the graveyard.
Whoops.
Sometimes a couple times, like, you just have crazy things that happen. Like I was like, okay, I guess I'll just go for like a Garuda Flicker here, and then I flip a Grand Abolisher off of another player and then just have an uncontested win because of it. Like sometimes you just go for value hits and you get absolutely nothing and it sucks, and then sometimes you just get absolute crazy hits and win the game off of them. So
We love gambling so much. Roll that die.
This deck is gambling. I will say, you can sometimes just, like, you can play perfectly and just miss every trigger and then hate yourself. And sometimes you can play the worst game of your life and then just flip into the win.
You just literally couldn't lose.
Yeah, you just couldn't lose. And so I will say the one thing about this deck that's frustrating is, like, being like, I played that correctly and I was punished for it. And then... playing it incorrectly and then being rewarded for it. It's funny. It's a pretty funny list in that way.
Sweet. All right, well, was there anything like major that you feel like we missed going through the list kind of card by card, or something that you feel like we should expand on a little bit more?
I mean not really. I mean, you just use clones and you do other people's win cons and win the game. It's pretty cool.
It's just that simple.
You just Kenan Basalt Monolith with a Auton Soldier and a Phyrexian Metamorph. It just is what it is.
All right. Well, sweet, dude. I loved having you on. Please, if you have things that you feel like you want to like plug or shout out, the floor is yours.
I mean, not to do Atlas's job for him, but hey, on the 10th, February 10th, Laughing Dragon, they're having a tournament. You should come. February 17th, Gabby's Olympic Cards and Comics is having their Olympic Challenger Series tournament, one of their quarterlies. You should come out to that. I'll be at that tournament. And maybe I'll see you and I'll sit across from you with Garuda and we'll fight out to our heart's content.
The man's a legend through and through. What more can I say? All right. Well, guys, I appreciate having you on. Max, thank you for sharing your sick deck with us, dude.
Let's go. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. Atlas, pleasure as always, my friend.
Indeed.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you next time.